Larry Kramer acts up again, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
Most of Larry Kramer's work happened before I was even born. Reading about his life and the days after his death, I was impressed.
I guess on radio I was a bit of a dance music pioneer. I think I became sort of an accidental activist. I arrived here during the Cold War from the Soviet Union when we were the most hated people on Earth. You know, that inherently allows you to identify and empathize with other people experiencing things like that.
Oh, wait a minute. Diversity is possible and important.
Everybody has the ability to do something.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Dutch report reveals the continuing costs of conversion therapy. Larry Kramer's Acting Up lives on. And Australian DJ Sveta spins house music and activism. Those stories and more this week because you tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 13th, 2020. Conversion therapy is alive and well in the Netherlands, according to a report issued this week by the country's health ministry. The practice of trying to make queer people straight through prayer and other often bizarre methods has been widely discredited by virtually every reputable medical and mental health organization. Professionals say it's not only worthless, but it often exacerbates any mental health problems the subject may have had. The report was prompted by inquiries from Dutch MPs who are considering legislation to ban the practice. Researchers found at least 15 organizations or individuals in the country who sometimes cloak the methodology as part of holiday camps, seminars, or workshops. About 30% of the 239 LGBTQ respondents to an online survey for the report said that they had experienced conversion therapy, according to Reuters. More than half said it had gone on for more than a year. Nearly all who underwent the so-called cure said that they had suffered from psychological problems. Those ranged from eating disorders and sexual issues to depression and suicidal thoughts. Conversion therapy is being outlawed in more and more jurisdictions around the world. However, at least one man who endured it told the Dutch researchers that he didn't think a ban would stamp it out. He said, "You simply call it treatment for depression or the like." The Dutch Health Ministry said it would publish a follow-up report in the next few months with specific recommendations on how to address the problem.
The Japanese prefecture of Mie has made it a criminal offense to out someone. This week, Governor Ike Suzuki signed the measure that outlaws disclosing a person's sexual orientation or transgender status without their permission. It's part of a wider anti-bias law protecting LGBTQ people. Suzuki stressed the often harmful consequences of outing and the necessity of anti-bias protections. He said that we need to do more to create a society that cares for each other. Outing has become a major issue in Japan in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic. Closeted gay people who have visited queer night spots fear being outed by epidemiologists tracking the spread of the virus. In the Tokyo suburb of Kunitachi, outing was prohibited in 2018 following the suicide of a gay student whose identity had been disclosed to his friends. Mie is the first prefecture in the country to criminalize it. On Japan's main island of Honshu, Mie has a population of more than 1.7 million people. Governor Suzuki has convened a panel of experts to decide how outing someone against their will should be punished.
U.S. President Donald Trump has kept his promise to protect LGBTQ citizens. That's what a Republican National Committee issue brief says this week. You be the judge. The missive lists things Trump has said about LGBTQ rights, but doesn't discuss many positive actions he's taken. It avoids any mention of Trump's crusade against military service by transgender people, and it was released just ahead of the administration's announcement that it was eliminating Obama-era trans healthcare protections. And by the way, that pride proclamation you did not hear was Trump's notable silence, unlike the annual June White House commemorations under his predecessor. The party's 2020 platform also stands in sharp contrast to its queer cheers for Trump. It stuck in 2016, regurgitating all of its anti-queer policy statements from 4 years ago. It includes transphobic positions, it promotes conversion therapy, it supports overturning marriage equality. And don't forget the Trump administration's friend of the court briefs in LGBTQ-related cases, including with the Supreme Court. They've supported faith-based discrimination in employment, access to health care, adoption, and foster parenting. They've also argued against the inclusion of transgender student athletes in school sports programs.
A transgender candidate has made history in West Virginia. Rosemary Ketchum became the U.S. state's first elected trans official with her narrow victory this week to represent Ward 3 on the Wheeling City Council. Ketchum has been a community activist for quite some time, including stints on the Wheeling Human Rights Commission and the board of directors of the ACLU of West Virginia. Ketchum's top issues include expanding access to affordable housing, addressing the opioid crisis, and improving infrastructure. As she told local TV station WTOV,
I think trans people know, you know, they are capable of doing things like this, running for office, being elected. But it's, I think, much more important for the cisgender community, people who are not trans, to see that, oh, wait a minute, diversity is, you know, possible and important.
Rosemary Ketchum.
Congratulations are in order for two LGBTQ activists from Down Under. Pioneering former New Zealand mayor and world's first transgender MP Georgina Beyer was among those named in the 2020 Queen's Birthday Honors this week. Delighted and gobsmacked to have been recognized, Beyer says, "Here we are many years down the track for that, and the sky's still here, nothing has fallen down, it's all okay." The same Queen's Honors also awarded the Order of Australia to Anthony Van Brown, a fierce advocate for queer-positive inclusion in faith communities. Deeply humbled and honored by the Queen's acknowledgement, Van Brown vowed to continue to work towards the day when LGBTIQ people are no longer rejected or tolerated within faiths, but their contributions accepted and celebrated. Both Beyer and Van Brown were honored by the Queen for their work in advancing LGBTQ rights. Both honorees credited the work of fellow activists for their successes.
Finally, lesbian U.S. soccer star Megan Rapinoe is among the many queer supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement currently sweeping the U.S. and the world. She signed a letter that urges local governments to redirect some of their usually enormous police department budgets to better fund healthcare, education, and other social services. Other signatories include out ACLU Executive Director Anthony Romero and celebrities like John Legend, Lizzo, Common, and Jane Fonda. Rapinoe joined lesbian tennis great Billie Jean King and triathlete trans advocate Chris Mosier, signing on to another letter, one to the U.S. National Collegiate Athletics Association, or NCAA. It calls on the organization to move its 2021 Men's Basketball Championship tournament out of Boise, Idaho, because of the state's effort to bar transgender girls from school sports. The letter was also endorsed by Jason Collins, the first openly gay man to play professional basketball in the U.S. During a socially distanced appearance on the June 12th Late Show with Stephen Colbert on CBS TV, Rapinoe did her best to rouse the rabble.
Use your voice in whatever way that you can. I truly believe that we all have a responsibility to make the world better in whatever way we can do best. You know, I'm an athlete, and this, you know, country very, very much glorifies its athletes and gives us this huge platform. So I'm going to leverage the platform for what I think is good. Maybe you're just, you know, a normal working person and you have 1 hour a month to knock on doors, but it's all important. And I think that's something people need to get comfortable with and understand, that like, you don't have to quit your job and be a full-time activist in the street every single day. Not everybody has the ability to do that, but everybody has the ability to do something.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 13th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is usually recorded in the studios of KPFK, but we are recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. The news is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay healthy.
And I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay safe.
This just in, on Monday, June 15th, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity is unlawful under the Constitution. The question was whether the word sex in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act covers anti-homosexual and transgender bias. Conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote for the somewhat surprising 6-3 majority that the answer was clear and exactly what Title VII forbids. We'll have complete coverage of this historic ruling on the next This Way Out.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, producer of This Way Out's Global Queer Read-In, a virtual Pride event streaming online Thursday, June 25th on thiswayout.org. 2020 Pulitzer Prize winner Jericho Brown, Maryland Poet Laureate Grace Cavallari, actor Alfre Woodard, playwright Charles Bush, writer-poet Alexis DeVoe, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins join a list of over 30 LGBTQI writers, playwrights, activists, and artists on camera reading passages from their favorite and influential works of queer literature and poetry. The event is free to the public to honor and celebrate the power of the written word, but additionally serves as an optional fundraiser for Overnight Productions, the parent nonprofit organization of This Way Out. Free tickets and tax-deductible sponsor opportunities are available at thiswayout.org. You'll hear the words of these writers read by us: James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, Paul Monett, Patricia Highsmith, Quentin Crisp, Truman Capote, Virginia Woolf, Janet Mock, and more. That's Thursday, June 25th, starting at noon Pacific time on Zoom and Twitch. Visit thiswayout.org for a full list.
Listen, my children, I shall be telling this with a sigh. Of all sad words of tongue and pen, the saddest are these: once upon a time.
I was following a news story of what was happening to ACT UP in the very early 90s, and a local politician who lied and said that ACT UP was sending AIDS-infected needles to this politician's home.
How Aussie DJ Sveta went from on the move to in the movement, later in the program. From outperformer Trey Pearson's recently released video, 1984. It's a tribute to ACT UP and its firebrand co-founder Larry Kramer, especially for these turbulent times. The queer youth at Outcasting Overtime come from a generation after Kramer's heyday, but we'll see how his dogged determination continues to inspire after his death. But first, it's remembered in this Rainbow Minute.
Larry Kramer acts up again, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. On March 24, 1987, 250 AIDS activists stormed Wall Street, protesting the high price of antiviral drugs and the Reagan administration's failure to address the AIDS crisis. They laid down in the intersection of Wall Street and Broadway, blocking traffic. 17 were arrested. The protest was the first of many actions led by the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, otherwise known as ACT UP. Their slogan was "Silence Equals Death." In one of the group's early protests, it covered Jesse Helms' home in a giant condom. ACT UP marked its 20th anniversary in March 2007, with hundreds of protesters heading to Wall Street to demand a single-payer healthcare system and drug price controls. Among the protesters was none other than Larry Kramer, who co-founded ACT UP in 1987. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and is recorded here in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and is read by volunteers like me. I'm Dan Roberts.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Sarah, an outcasting youth participant. In 1983, Larry Kramer, the longtime AIDS activist who died on May 27, 2020, wrote, "If this article doesn't scare the blank out of you, we're in real trouble." The article was entitled 1112 and Counting, and it appeared in the New York Native, a newspaper serving the gay and lesbian population of New York City. The 1112 referred to the number of confirmed HIV/AIDS cases at that time, early in the AIDS crisis, and we meant the gay community. Larry Kramer saw the mountain for what it was when many didn't. He understood that not getting to the top and conquering it would mean horrible illness and death for millions of people. The article called the gay community into action to protect itself. It didn't take long for people to realize that what Larry Kramer said in that 1983 article was true. The AIDS crisis did scare the blank out of people, and he used that fear to spur a wave of AIDS activism.
Plague! 40 million infected people is a f***ing plague! And nobody acts as if it is!
Until we get our acts together, all of us, we are as good as dead.
Most of Larry Kramer's work happened before I was even born. Reading about his life and the days after his death, I was impressed. He was an incredible force for change, a towering historical figure who was also flawed and controversial. But he lived during such a different time that, at first, I couldn't relate to him, or for that matter, to anyone living through the AIDS crisis. I couldn't imagine what it must have been like to open the New York Native in 1983 and read the words, "If we don't act immediately, then we face our approaching doom." Larry Kramer ended 1112 and Counting with a call to action. He needed 3,000 people to be ready for civil disobedience, and he asked readers to send in their telephone numbers and how many people they could be counted on to provide. There were no specifics given, no qualifications that these people needed to have. They just needed to be angry enough to show up and fight. Over the course of a decade and a half, Larry Kramer, the groups he co-founded, and other activists helped turn AIDS from a nearly automatic death sentence into a chronic, manageable disease. In the years since then, activists tackled other issues. They brought an end to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the flawed policy that allowed gays to serve in the military, but only if they hid their sexual orientation. They made marriage equality the law of the land and got other discriminatory laws overturned. Along the way, they helped improve public attitudes towards LGBTQ people. But LGBTQ people continue to be singled out for unequal treatment in countless ways every day. Some people are pressing the claim that their religious beliefs permit them to discriminate against us in ways that would be impermissible for any other minority. LGBTQ youth continue to be at a greatly increased risk of bullying, homelessness, and suicide. Trans women of color continue to be murdered at an alarming rate. And in addition to LGBTQ issues, of course, our society is facing crises of income inequality, increasing polarization and division, climate change, and violence against people of color, including the recent killings of George Floyd in Minneapolis and Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. Right now, these problems can seem too enormous to solve. A lot of people, though certainly fewer than before, still hate LGBTQ people, and they are misusing their cherry-picked religious beliefs, the exercise of which is protected by the Constitution, as justification for their hatred. Possible solutions to climate change are opposed by powerful businesses and the politicians who support them. And racial prejudice, America's original sin, is still out there in full force and often armed to the teeth in another misuse of a constitutional right. Larry Kramer inspired people to come together in activism. His life made me realize that anyone, young people, even I, can make a difference. Solving these problems, and too many others to name, will require our shared sense of the necessity of solving them, along with Larry Kramer's style, persistence, anger, and determination, in sustained collective action by my generation and the generations yet to come. We have to see the mountain and find ways to conquer it. That will be a fitting way to honor Larry Kramer's legacy. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, based in New York. This piece was created with input from the Outcasting team, including Chris, Justin, Lil, Lucas, and me, Sarah. Our executive producer is Mark Sofus. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and related content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Sydney, Australia DJ Sveta Gilliman come from? Well, her official bio says that she and her family escaped from the Soviet Union and made it through Europe Sound of Music style, and it seems like the sounds of music have been with her ever since. Now she's considered spinning royalty in her adopted homeland with a sound all her own that's graced clubs, museums, fashion galas, and even the Sydney Opera House. This way, our correspondent William Broom got Sveta to stop spinning and sit down for a chat.
How did you first get into DJing?
I got into DJing when I was studying film and television production and journalism under communications at university. I was quite young. I started university at 17, very early 90s, I would say at the beginning of 1990. And here I am giving away my age, though I'm actually an old woman. And the amazing part of being around at that time doing community radio, and I was doing a breakfast show which involved talks and everything else, was that it was also, especially in Australia, the beginning of the dance music movement. I had just spent 2 or 3 or 4 years going underage to first big dance parties here in Australia in the Horton Pavilion, which was located directly across the street from my high school, Sydney Girls High. So I'd been getting up to no good since I was 15. 1987, you know, house music was completely brand new at that time, like it had just kind of been invented. And when I started radio, because my breakfast show was on a Friday, I really wanted to play it on Friday mornings because we would be gearing up to go out on the Friday night. I was met with a bit of resistance because at that time, no one played dance music outside of evening or late afternoon specialist time slots. Mm. And I said, well, it's Friday. It's Friday. And some of this music is great. Like, you know, Good Life was out, you know, all of these songs that are dance classics now. And they unsuccessfully stopped me from playing it. And then they did a radiothon, and my show raised 5 times the amount of money to all the other breakfast shows. And then they changed the policy and asked all the breakfast shows to start playing dance music. So I guess on radio I was a bit of a dance music pioneer.
You are a very successful club DJ here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. You've performed overseas as well in the United States and I believe Europe. But you're also an activist. How important is it for you to use your profile to campaign on important issues, particularly within our community?
Well, I think I became sort of an accidental activist. I think it's just kind of happened organically because of the way that the sort of discrimination that my family experienced in the Soviet Union and the fact that I actually physically went through the refugee process myself and landed in the country at 8. I arrived here during the Cold War from the Soviet Union when we were the most hated people on earth. You know, that inherently allows you to identify and empathize with other people experiencing things like that. I think when I realized that I maybe had started to become an activist was when I was following a news story of what was happening to ACT UP in the very early 90s. And I was following it on 2SER on my show. And Darren Hinch used to be a famous broadcaster, and then he became a politician. At that time, he was an agitator, and he used to run a lot of sensational, very highly watched shows. And he read out a press release about a local politician who lied and said that ACT UP was sending AIDS-infected needles to this politician's home. her boys were gay. So I contacted the Hinch program and I said, this is really irresponsible. And because I had a lot of my friends participate in ACT UP, I did a lot of volunteering with the AIDS Trust of Australia, all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, this is very dangerous stuff. And you presenting things like that and demonizing a very important group is not on. And so they called me back and said, we'd like to put you on your say. He had this, you know, people who called up. And I said, I'm not from ACT UP. I don't want to speak on behalf of ACT UP. And so a week passed, and then I get a call out of the blue, and they're like, can you please speak? And I said, did you contact ACT UP? And they said, no, we didn't. And if you don't speak, there's going to be no other side to this. I kind of conceded, and I felt like it was very important to choose to do so, and I did, and I spoke up, and apparently from the feedback I got from my entire radio station, I was a lot more eloquent and sounded like I really represented what was going on. I can remember as a point where I would say I was an active activist. I decided to do that.
What do you think are the issues, particularly the major issues concerning our community today?
In Australia, we need to defeat the religious discrimination bill, because essentially, after doing a lot of campaigning with marriage equality, you know, the Conservatives, that's the only way they can handle that it came through. So essentially, if the religious discrimination bill comes through, we would essentially be losing our human rights. So before marriage equality came through and before this bill, all people, like people of color, people of different cultures, you know, sexuality, we're all protected under human rights laws. If this bill comes in, we will no longer be protected from this under human rights. You know, it's I don't understand how in this day and age, after all the work that we've done, it's not just for LGBT people, it's for people of color, for everyone, who are just spiraling backwards under extreme conservative right-wing politicians that we particularly have here in Australia and in the US. They're friends. They're basically doing the same things.
DJ Sveta, thanks so much for talking to us here on This Way Out.
My absolute pleasure, and I just want to send a big hello to all the listeners out there in my second home in the US.
This is William Broom in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Tanya King Perry, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Dan Roberts, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Outcast for Sarah, produced by Mark Sofus, and from William Broom. Trey Pearson sang 1984, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trenum, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WREK Atlanta, Georgia, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world. Stay safe and stay tuned.